Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Hack the Entrepreneur is supported by CityCards with Android Pay. Listening on your phone? Now you can pay while you listen, using the same device. Just tap and go. Download the Android Pay app on Google Play or visit city.com/AndroidPay to get started. Android Pay is available for eligible Citi consumer credit and debit cards.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a marketer, lamp maker, entrepreneur, and fellow DC-er. Don't worry, this will make sense during the conversation. She spent the first part of her career in banking and finance, but like many of us, she wanted to do more meaningful work, and she wanted to move from Australia to New York. My guest turned a passion for making DIY lamps into a business in 2013 when she started I Like That Lamp. Using her successes in the lamp business, she also started a marketing company called Bobsled Marketing, where she helps brands launch and optimize their products via the Amazon Marketplace. Now, let's hack Kiri Masters. Before we get rolling here, I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Braintree. I know you remember the first dollar you made in business. It's a hard thing to forget. It's one of the greatest parts of being an entrepreneur. And now you want to grow until your business makes your millionth or billionth dollar. But have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit braintreepayments.com/hack. That's braintreepayments.com/hack.
We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, Kiri. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
It's absolutely my pleasure, and I think this is going to be a lot of fun. So what do you say we jump into it?
Let's do it.
All right. Kiri, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Sure. I think it's all about surrounding yourself with the right community of people. For me, I'm really lucky to have my husband working in the business with me, Tom. And so he's a great sounding board for things that we need to talk about with the business. At the end of the day, I end up making the decisions, but it's great to have someone to bounce those things off. But outside of that, having a community of friends who are also entrepreneurs who are kind of walking the same journey as you is really critical, not just for a bit of moral support and to pick you up when you're down, which is it's a big journey that we're on. But to also be able to be on top of what's working online, what's working with marketing, new ideas, and just to have people in your life that really challenge you and support you on the journey.
Yeah, I like it. And I agree. So are you talking, so besides your husband, which is obviously probably the most crucial one, and having him working in the business with you, but externally from that, is it people... Like, is this a reason why you moved from Australia to New York, or are you talking like virtual people that you have and you can meet on Skype and that sort of thing?
Oh, that's a great question. It's really both. And I think that nothing can really substitute face-to-face human interaction, whether it's, you know, meeting over drinks or coffee or something like that. To have people locally that you can meet up with and hold you accountable is pretty different, I feel, to being part of a forum or a community online, where if you drop out for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, people might not notice that you're gone. So I guess it depends on what your personal preference is, but for me, having some local entrepreneur friends in New York where I live is really important. And I know that they're going to call me out if I go missing or I just don't show up for a couple of months.
Fair enough. And I agree with forums have their place, but you're right. If you disappear, people don't really know because they're all caught up. But if you don't show up for that drink you're supposed to, they kind of know. they notice you're not there.
Yeah, exactly. And we really can get sucked into this vortex of our business. And there's always issues. There's always exciting things that we're working on. And I don't know about you, but I really get sucked in sometimes and I can just completely bury myself in the ground for weeks at a time and not come up for air or even leave the house for days at a time sometimes. So that, the social aspect of it is really important too, just to be able to come up for air and get out of your own head sometimes.
Yeah, that makes me feel good because I really thought I was the only one who like stays in my house for days at a time. I really did. I was like, that's not healthy.
I went to the grocery store. This is a few weeks ago. I went to the grocery store and I realized it'd been 2 days since I left my apartment. And I was just at the supermarket at like 10 p.m. It was strangely didn't really feel that bad or shameful or anything. It's not necessarily something that's really healthy that you want to be doing all the time. But it's more indicative of really heavy period of work where it might be good, might be really challenged and inspired.
I agree. Exactly. And it's not a constant thing. It's kind of a project sort of based thing where it's like, this has to be done now and we need to just do it.
Yep.
So, and it's exciting. And so I believe you've been at this whole game of entrepreneurship for quite some time now, Kiri, but I think looking back, I know reading back on your journey, it seems like it wasn't sort of a natural progression. I don't even know if anybody ever has sort of just I've always been an entrepreneur. But let's go back if we can, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things, that either they had this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or as mostly seems to be the case, they find that they just can't work for somebody else anymore.
Mm.
So could you take us back to sort of when you discovered this about yourself? And then tell us which side of the fence you see yourself on.
Sure. A lot of entrepreneurs have this perspective that they were terrible employees or they were constantly getting fired. I was a great employee. I was really into my corporate job. I was climbing the ladder. I was getting promotions and ended up moving from my home country of Australia to New York City to work in banking, which was my industry at the time. So I got a really great job with JP Morgan. And I loved it. I loved what I was doing. I loved the sort of internal politics and stuff like that. I really knew how to work the system in the corporate world. So I never had a really strong moment of, I need to get out of here. I hate my job. For me, it was over time, just feeling like I wanted a side project and I wanted to challenge myself in a different way outside of work. So I started a side business, which was in the crafts and DIY space called I Like That Lamp, which was driven, as a lot of startups are, driven out of a personal frustration that I couldn't find a lamp and lampshade that I really wanted for my apartment. So I made my own and I realized that finding the materials was kind of a frustrating and confusing process. So I created a site and some resources about how to make your own lamps and lampshades. And that was my first real business.
Wow. And you're still running that business?
I am. Yep.
Nice. And so you are an excellent employee. And now you created I Like That Lamp. So that was 2013, I believe.
Yep.
That's 3 years ago, at least at this point. So I get that you were a great employee and that a lot of entrepreneurs become terrible employees. And so, or that's how they see themselves. And so they leave that world.
Yeah. It's a badge of honor.
It is.
To be unemployable. It really, yeah.
But now, 3 years later, are you unemployable?
I think I am, actually. It's a really good point. Yeah.
It's hard. The further you get away from it, the harder it is, I think, to go back. Even though you might have started not like that, this side project, Kiri, has now taken you to full unemployability.
definitely. But I would say that when you're running, it's a little different if you're running a company that serves consumers and you have potentially, you know, you're selling products that are under $100, you don't necessarily have conversations with those people or you're held accountable to those people. But if you have a service business or you're servicing other businesses, then you do, with that client relationship, it is almost like having an employer. You're accountable for results. You're getting paid based on results. Clients can fire you. So I feel like over time, especially in the B2B space, those relationships end up being like employer-employee relationships. And if you've always had a tenuous relationship with being an employee, then that could be, you know, that could make things difficult for you when you start working with clients that have expectations about your work performance.
That's really true. That's a great perspective on it because, yeah, I think you're absolutely right that it if you're in the service-based business and you're working, then those clients are basically your boss for that time frame and they can fire you. Mm-hmm. Have you ever fired one of them?
Yes. Nice. I love doing that.
That's a hard thing I find for a lot of people to do, make that first step of firing that first client.
Yes.
We feel, I think, when we start that we can't or shouldn't ever do that.
Right. Yeah. Especially when they threaten to sue you after you fired them, which is my experience the first time I let a client go. They threatened to sue me. And that never feels good, even though I felt like they were bluffing and they were ultimately. But that is, I guess that is something that's different to employer-employee relationship is that your employer rarely threatens to sue you if you decide to leave.
That's true. That's true. But that it, when your former client decides to sue you after you fire them, it probably makes you really reassured that you made the right decision.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wow, I did not want this person as a client. Okay. Oh, that's so true. So when you talk about clients as employers and as your boss, sort of, that's, to me, it starts to really blur a fine line between freelancing and entrepreneurship.
Mm, yeah.
And I know that there's a really blurry line, and I think that it's actually kind of cool that there is a blurry line because it doesn't need to be so distinct. But what do you see as the difference between freelancing and being an entrepreneur?
I think freelancers are still entrepreneurs. The distinction that I would make is if you're a freelancer, then you're self-employed. If you're an entrepreneur that's running a company, which in the natural progression from being a freelancer is to be a consultant or an agency, which is the direction that I decided to pursue. I started out as a freelancer to help other brands start selling on Amazon, which is something that I knew a little bit about and had some personal experience in. And over time, I knew that I wanted my company to be bigger than myself. I wanted it to be more than Kiri Masters consulting on one project at a time. So I think that's the distinction. And the direction that I've made a decision to pursue is to create a company that's bigger than myself. And at this point, I don't do any of the delivering the projects to clients. I have a team that I've trained on how to deliver projects and they do that. But that isn't the best way. That isn't the only way. It's just the way that I've decided to pursue my personal entrepreneurial aspirations. But there are some very well-paid freelancers and consultants out there who never want to have employees and they don't want to change the direct interaction that they have with clients. And that's perfectly fine. I think that there is, in our culture today, there's a lot of startup worshipping and this idea that if you don't have a company that's bigger than yourself, then that's, you failed in a way. But there are a lot of people who are perfectly suited and should really focus on being a great freelancer or a great consultant, because when you get into the nitty-gritty of firing lots of clients, if you have to, hiring people, figuring out employment contracts and all this kind of stuff, it's not as sexy as it sounds to have employees, you know?
I agree fully. And it's not for everyone. It shouldn't be for everyone. And you're right. There's like this, I don't know, everybody talks about startups and how it's like the greatest thing. And I mean, there's some consultants and freelancers that are super high paid, get to work yeah. when they want to, where they want to. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, why would you ever want to give that up? But, right. and then sometimes I think we just give it up because we feel that that's the natural progression. Mm-hmm. We've gone from employee to freelancer to high paid freelancer to now let's grow it into something that destroys the way of life that I love.
Yep.
And it's hard to go back, I think. So.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I think freelancing is definitely just part of the progress between working and being an entrepreneur fully, but it's definitely entrepreneurial. I agree.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So your one thing you said at the beginning is surrounding yourself with community. Your husband is now part of your team and works with you so you can bounce ideas off of him.
Yeah.
And that is your one thing. So every blog post now, Kiri, every expert talks about the 80-20 rule in business. You're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. So right now, Kiri, could you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Oh, wow. I was expecting the question to go the other way. What am I absolutely not good at in my business? It's a hard question to answer because I think that as the leader in a small business of less than 10 people, you have to touch every part of your business. But I would say the things that drain me that I don't necessarily really enjoy doing are probably on the operational side. So we have processes that our team follows and all the different ways that different parts of the business sort of work together. That is something that I have a high level view of, but for me to get down into the weeds and be looking at processes and things like that is not a fun activity for me. And I like the question because it sort of reflects if that's not your strength and that's not really what you're good at, then thinking about how to delegate that to someone who is really strong in that as soon as possible.
Yeah, because that would be a question for you then, is the processes part of a business, the operations and having written processes and you having a high level view of it. So it seems like you understand the absolute value of having those written processes, yet you probably wouldn't have sort of the capacity or that sort of brain like myself to be able to sit down and make all of those yourself.
Yeah.
So did you bring somebody in because you were aware that you needed them, but you were also aware that you couldn't do them yourself?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I did create all the processes I needed to for the company. So I was really sitting down and writing out process documents. And I think over time, as the business grows and the leader becomes more and more detached about what goes on in the everyday operational capacity, the leader is not the right person to be sitting down and writing out processes for other people to follow. If you're not the one following that process or delivering that service to the client, then you've got no business really trying to figure out how that's going to work. And it's something that I have really started to embrace only in the last couple of months, is to look at, instead of dictating to someone else what they should be doing and the process and steps to follow, to be communicating to that person what the outcome should be and letting them figure out with that space between their two ears how they could get from point A to point B, knowing what the outcome should be and the time frame and the costs and resources. And that's challenging in a way when you're used to having a lot of control about everything that happens. And sometimes people will get it right and sometimes they'll get it wrong. But I could do that same process and get it wrong.
True. And when they use their own head and they get from point A to point B more efficiently, so they do it the right way, do they then have access to go update that process?
Exactly. Yep.
So it's not static. It's like an ever-evolving...
Right. Yes.
Nice.
Exactly. So I think that the benefit there is that, well, A, your time isn't being spent on activities where it's someone else could figure out how to do it. Someone else could document it. Secondly, they feel a bit more ownership over that process and the way that it's communicated to other people too. Because if you sit someone down and say, we're working on this project, here's the 12 steps to do it, they're not going to feel as empowered as if you sit them down and say, we've got this project, this is the outcome that we want. figure out how to do it, and then train your teammates on that process. It's a lot more, you're giving people a reason to step up to the plate and contribute themselves.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Smart. And this is a great place because you've given this idea of the project. Here's the project to work on. So this is where I want to actually talk about projects with you. So if we can go back one step or whatever it is before giving that to your teammate, I would like to talk about projects. And this is like a loose term. So whether it's a big new project within your company or a smaller one, whatever you want. But I would love to know, Kiri, right now, what your process and whether that process is a written or just an internal gut process you go through. But when an idea comes across either your head or your inbox or somewhere, how do you go about determining the project is worth the time, energy, and resources to run with right now?
Oh, that is such a good question. And this is something that I really feel, I think that is a skill that comes with time. And it's certainly something that I'm working on myself. As entrepreneurs, people with an entrepreneurial spirit, we have a lot of ideas and a lot of energy to try and execute on them. And I certainly suffer from the same paralysis that comes when you have so many ideas and so many things that you want to implement and not enough time and not enough resources to do that. So it's something I really struggle with is these kind of bright, shiny objects and knowing what to pursue. And I wish I was able to tell you about this great framework that I use to make decisions about what projects to pursue. But I think part of it comes with having a gut feeling about what will work and what won't based on your knowledge of the industry or of your particular skill set. Having your finger on the pulse of the marketplace and knowing what people are interested in, what is kind of emerging technology or things that are progressing in your industry. And then also just being able to look at your resources, whether it's time, money, employees, knowledge that you have that other people don't, and being able to sort of really be able to consider, is this something that's going to push the needle for me with whatever goal you have at the time? So I've been pulling back on initiatives and projects, which to me seem really interesting and exciting and something that I would like to spend time on, and thinking how this is going to take that employee away from their regular work or their regular commitments and kind of destroy their productivity for a little bit. And so when it's just you as a freelancer, or you don't really have to think about resourcing other people, then it's kind of easy to just spend time where you want. But if you're pulling people away from their regular work and the way that they're being measured for results, then that can be kind of irresponsible as a boss. So certainly something that I've had to reconsider is my attraction to bright, shiny objects.
It sounds like from where I'm sitting, it sounds like you've reached like a level of sort of entrepreneurial maturity, if you will, where you're now appreciating the value of other people's time, of their productivity, and the value of, I think, like you said, how entrepreneurs, we have tons of ideas and energy to execute on them, but at some point we have to start saying no to most things.
Yes.
And I think when we start, we want to say yes to everything.
Yes. Absolutely.
But now you sound like a wizened entrepreneur. You're like, I know we can't do everything. No matter how big my team is, I still can't just pull them away and scramble them everywhere because they won't be productive.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure if you know the coach and consultant Tim Conley.
Yes, I just met him in person last week in Barcelona.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, I was in Barcelona too.
Oh. Yeah, I was there for just over 2 weeks, and then I was in Lisbon for a week, but I was there for a conference with Tim.
You didn't go to DCBCN?
That's where I went.
I was there as well. How did we not meet?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But yeah, my daughter's upstairs right now wearing a DCBCN t-shirt outside playing.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
That's funny. Wow. It wasn't a very big conference.
It was not. But I was kind of holed up a little bit too while I was there with some projects. So, wow, that's crazy. Are you a member of the DC as well?
Yeah, totally.
There we go.
Yeah. I mean, I have only been a member for 6 or 8 months or so, but okay. Two guys from my mastermind have been in there for years. And so they just were like, you have to join this. And then this was the first conference. And so I went with them and it was fun.
Yeah. I really recommend the Bangkok event as well, because everyone stays in the same hotel more or less. And the whole event happens at the hotel. So there's the sessions, but then also like dinner and drinks, and you bump into people at breakfast, and it's a lot more kind of...
It was pretty scattered, this one.
It's very scattered, yeah.
Which is cool, but yeah, I think I'm looking at the Bangkok one, so we'll see.
Mm.
But yeah, that was
my favorite.
That was cool, yeah.
So yeah, Tim Connolly has this really great idea about a leader's lieutenant, which is something that I'm really eager to put in place in my business over the next 12 months. And that the concept is that as entrepreneurs, we're passionate, we've got lots of ideas and not enough time to execute them. And a leader's lieutenant is someone who can come in and put your ideas into action. And they have a really strong operational skills. So they can come in and communicate what needs to be done, how to do it, resources, stuff like that, so that you can actually leverage someone else's organizational and operational ability rather than having your ideas just kind of fizzle out or not get implemented or distract everyone from what they're doing. And I love that concept that you've got a sidekick to put things into action.
Yeah, because we do need to put things into action, right? It's just making sure that the right things and that the team doesn't lose focus on the things that really matter as well.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing.
And that's another reason why I love what Tim Connolly says about a CEO shouldn't be writing SOPs, because that, again, we're responsible for coming up with ideas and the direction of the company and the vision and stuff like that, not sitting down and writing a process checklist.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm a huge Tim Connolly fan. I will link to the Tim Connolly. Tim Connolly was just on the show about a month ago.
Oh, great.
So I'll link to that for everyone who happened to miss that as well. But he was kind of a hit, I heard. So yeah, we know about him and we like him. All right, Kiri. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I want to wrap up on one final question for you.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So it kind of goes with what we were just talking about, but as entrepreneurs, right, as dreamers, we're always projecting our success into the future. So in 1 month or in 3 months or in 6 months, when you hit that revenue metric, when you write that book, when you stand on that stage, whatever it happens to be, that's when you're going to see yourself as successful. Yet we both know that right before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones and throw them further into the future.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter what we accomplish. From the outside, we always look successful. And from the inside, we're always trying to become successful. And we end up living in this weird gap because it's like walking towards the horizon. Obviously, the further you walk, the further it always gets away from you. And so we end up in this weird gap where it doesn't matter what we accomplish. We never feel like we're there. So Kiri, I would love it if you could. You've been at this game for quite a few years now. You've had a lot of successes, but I would love it if you would stop right now, turn and look behind you and tell me how you feel about your entrepreneurial sort of career up until today.
I feel really at the same time very proud of the journey that I've had, and then also dissatisfied with my projection so far. And I think that's pretty common, and that it would be incredibly boring if we set a goal and achieved it and that was it. Then you sit down, you have your weekends back, you just watch TV. That isn't the way that we operate as entrepreneurs. We're always thirsting for more, and it can get really exhausting. But if we didn't have really high expectations of ourselves and our abilities and the way that we can accomplish great things, then we wouldn't be aspiring for new great things, and we wouldn't be pushing ourselves and other people around us. So while I look back and I'm proud, your own worst critic as well, and you can see all the missteps that you made. And that's possibly why so many entrepreneurs are so generous with their time and their thoughts about helping other people, because we're so desperate to not let other people make the same mistakes that we did. And I'm really grateful for that in the community, the entrepreneurial community that we're all part of.
Nice. Very well said. Very well said. And I 100% fully agree that we can't just hit that goal and then be done.
Yeah.
Because it's not what's in us, but I do hope that we can stop and at least appreciate it, what we have accomplished. And then that'll even give us more energy to push forward even further.
Yeah, definitely. When you reach a goal, you never really reach that feeling of, I've made it, I did it, we're here. It just, the glory is kind of never quite there. And I think that's a good thing. Otherwise, we'd get really big heads and not be pushed to the next level.
Yeah, I agree. It's about the journey, really. It's not, there is no destination. Yeah. There's no place, I think, where you can possibly get where it's like, well, I'm here, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
It's really, that's what it is, right?
I had a really interesting conversation with, I went to a tech conference a few months ago and I met a guy who's almost exactly the same age as me. We were born in the same year, the same month, one day apart. And he has this venture VC funded company, which I don't know, like has 100 employees, huge company. And we're talking about his company versus mine, which is bootstrapped, 10 people, profitable. And his company, which is huge, VC funded, all this pressure and not profitable because a lot of those startups aren't. And that's not their main focus anyway. So I was asking him what he got out of that whole journey and whether he would do it again and whether it would feel better or different to have like a smaller bootstrapped company that you're fully in charge of. And he said that he wasn't so focused on becoming the CEO of a big company and winning a lot of funding, but of the person that it made him become and the process of going through the funding rounds and having to convince people that your business is legit and having to report to these investors and shareholders and everything like that. That forces a level of maturity and growth upon you that you couldn't get through any other channel. And while I don't ever want to go out and raise funding for a business, it does, in a small way, it does kind of resonate with me what you said about the journey and not the destination. And I guess that is an area that I could look back on and be really proud of, is the person that I've become because of the company that I've built, rather than, oh, we reached this revenue milestone or now we've got this number of employees. So it's a really good point.
I love it. I love it. All right, Carrie, this has been, it's been an absolute blast.
Great.
Could we now take a moment? Could you now please take a moment? And we've got to talk about your businesses sort of in passing, but could you just specifically tell the listener where they can find out more about you and your business?
Sure. So my agency is called Bobsled Marketing. It's at bobsledmarketing.com. And we help brands to launch and grow their revenue on Amazon.
Excellent. And also, we mentioned I Like That Lamp, which can be found at ilikethatlamp.com, I believe. Your first side project that got you into this whole entrepreneurial game. And it's there for everyone. So bobsledmarketing.com, ilikethatlamp.com. We went off on a little conversation about the DC, which probably is mysterious to a lot of people, but I will link to the DC as well in the show notes, as well as Tim Conley's episode. And Kiri, you are on Twitter, I believe, at Kiri Masters.
Yes, that's it.
Excellent. I will link to all of those at hacktheentrepreneur.com. So when you're done working out, walking, whatever it is you happen to be doing, riding your bike, skateboarding, whatever it is, those links will be there for you. You can track down Kiri and her business and go find out more about her. Kiri, thank you so much. This has been an absolute blast. I thank you for stopping by. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thank you so much, John. It was such a pleasure talking with you and thanks for everything that you do.
Kiri, thank you so much for joining me. That was a lot of fun. And I'm still a little shocked that we were at the same quite small conference and we were introduced totally separately via email and this happened right after. That's very cool. That's very cool. So we talked briefly about the DC, the Dynamite Circle, and it's a forum that you pay to be part of in a group that then can meet throughout the year and at two major conferences. And it doesn't have to be this, not about an endorsement for that. This is just going to be quickly an endorsement for finding your people. And I currently live in a tiny little city in Canada. That's where this show was started. And geography doesn't have to be your problem. Don't make it because you don't live in San Francisco or you don't live in New York City. It really is truly irrelevant at this point because your people are out there and they're gathering somewhere. As much as you may have heard that before, I just joined the Dynamite Circle in the last 6 months or 7 months or 8 months or something. I didn't know those people were there. Those are my people and they are all gathered in a place. And yours are places. You just have to find them. Facebook is probably the worst place, I'm going to say. It's a great place to find them, but personally, I would take them off of Facebook because you can't really get any conversation done without just being filled with noise. But you can find people there and then try and take them to Skype or to Slack or somewhere private where you can have conversations and kind of push each other and bounce out ideas off each other, that sort of thing. But it really, truly, truly, truly is so important of a thing to do. But back to the conversation. Kiri is a smart, smart entrepreneur who has done some really interesting, some really cool things. Huge move from Australia, obviously, to New York, and a huge move from banking to entrepreneurship. It almost doesn't get further apart. And so I love the transition that she made. And I love going back through the conversation and just seeing what Kiri had said, hearing it back again was really interesting because when I went through it the first time, I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 things marked down that I wanted to go back and listen to. So I went back and I listened and I got down to 5 things. Then I got down to 3 things and then I got it down to 2. I listened to it one more time and Kiri said something that was so simple yet profound. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
As a lot of startups are, driven out of a personal frustration that I couldn't find a lamp and lampshade that I really wanted for my apartment. So I made my own and I realized that finding the materials was kind of a frustrating and confusing process. So I created a site and some resources about how to make your own lamps and lampshades. And that was my first real business.
And that's the hack. Kiri, Kiri, Kiri. I love this. I love the simplicity of this because so many of us get stuck on what that next idea, what that business is to start. This is the ultimate, scratching your own itch. But it actually goes beyond that because I know that most people would think of DIY lamp making as not a big enough market maybe, or like popular enough or whatever you want to call it. And all of that stuff you have just proven to us is completely irrelevant. And I love how you summarized this by saying that was my first real business. It started as a side business and that was your first real business. These are real businesses. We all have these hobbies or obsessions or whatever, things that we want to do, and we go and do them online and we do them and they're a bit frustrating, but we do them anyways. And we just kind of put up with the fact that it's a little bit frustrating or it doesn't work the way you want it to. Pay attention to these things. If you want to build a lamp because you can't find lamps where you live, and you go to build a lamp and you go to try and find the products and the parts of it online, I obviously know nothing about lamps, but if you do and you track down these different parts of the whatever it is you're making and make one for yourself, you should think that, I'm probably not the only one who wants to do this. So why not make it less difficult? Why not make it less frustrating? That's all it takes to create a business. If you can make something more efficient or make something easier or make something slightly better for people performing that task or searching for that thing or putting together this group of stuff, that is a business. That's where these businesses come from. It's really about finding that itch that you have yourself, paying attention throughout the day as you do things on your phone, on your computer, whatever it is, pay attention for the next few days about little things to do with your email or things that you do all the time or when you want to make something or create something or buy something. If it's just a little bit inefficient, think of how you can make it a little bit more efficient for people. And that's where monetization comes in. That's where people will pay you. And they'll either pay you directly or you can get paid through affiliates by sending people to these different places because you've aggregated where they all sit. And somebody can search for how to make a lamp and now they find you rather than having to find five different sites. They find yours and you can send them to all the different places. This is it. This is how it works. And I absolutely love the simplicity and clarity and the profoundness of its simplicity, Kiri. And I thank you so much for sharing that with us. All right. That was fun. It feels good to be back on schedule. It feels good to be publishing three times a week again. And I'm so glad you're here with me. It's fun, as always. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the site. Every Sunday, get my best work sent right to your inbox. I'd love to have you on there. Join just over 3,000 other people getting that every Sunday now. So it'd be cool if you got it too. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the place. And of course, you can hit reply to any of those emails and they come straight to my phone or to my laptop. I'd love to have a conversation with you, answer your questions, talk to you. Whatever it is, it would be fun. But yeah, it's been great. We're here three times a week now, so it's good. Summer holidays are over, at least for me. Hopefully not for you. But yeah, it's been fun. Thank you so very much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.